When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Hello. This is The Measurables with War Air Boswell. You may ask, what are the measurables? That's a variable. It means different things to different people. If you are someone who is looking to gain information on a specific industry, or if you are looking to transition from one industry to the next, or you just have several questions, this is the place for you to be. This is The Measurables with War Air Boswell. Thank you for being here. A lot of people may ask, what are the measurables? It's very simple. If you are someone looking to gain wisdom on a certain topic, if you are in a current position and you're looking to segue, this is the place for you to be. On this podcast, we'll talk to a series of individuals from various backgrounds covering a multitude of topics. What are the key themes? Navigating being biopic, fostering mentorship, alternative pathing, pivoting in your career, strategic decision making, turning passion into profession. That's what The Measurables are all about. Thank you for being here. Hello, The Measurables with War Air Boswell. And today we are joined by a gentleman. A lot of us who are in the industry know him. And if you tapped in, you definitely know who he is. But you'd be surprised the amount of work, the body of work that this brother has put together is amazing. And what's ultimately amazing about him is that he can walk around and people not just be jumping all over him, because what he has done is like amazing, and he's still at the beginning. None other than Mr. Jide Osifeso. How are you, my brother?
I'm great, man. That was a very nice intro.
I mean, bro,
what are you talking about?
Listen, I tell you all the time, like we always have these conversations, but like I always tell you, like, just like from the outside looking in, looking at what you do, like, you know, I'm just a fan and I admire what you do, how you've been able to just like really jump from here to there. And it's all seamless. Mm. It's all one narrative, whether it's you doing, you know, TDE merch, whether it's you doing, you know, stuff for Nope, and just also your own brand. Like it's amazing. Mm. Yeah, so thanks, I mean, man. I just coming from somebody who's in the game, talking to somebody who's like making incredible strides in it, bro.
Thanks, man.
It's a tap in.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it. Likewise, man.
So my question to you, brother, off top is, how are you, brother? How is your health? How is your mental? How are you feeling, my brother?
Everything is great. I mean, I think my mental, you got to ask my friends, I think, about how my mental is, but I feel good. Like I feel happy. Yeah, everything. I feel like at peace right now. Everything is good. There's a stillness, I think, in my life right now that I'm really enjoying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. Just in summary, like, I feel thankful to be around people again after the past couple of years.
Tell me about it.
See you face to face, not on Zoom. Or, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm just really happy. I'm happy to be alive.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you have such a unique name. What does it mean? First and last, and before you answer, when I was young, having the name War Air Boswell, I hated that name.
That's a powerful name.
That's
the name of a warrior.
Well, that's what it means in Swahili.
Okay.
But have you ever gone to a black church?
Yes.
All right. So at the black church, they say all first time visitors get up and tell us your name.
Okay.
I can feel this. So, brother, I would stand up. What's your name? War Air. And I would hear like tons of kids just laughing. Like, what is it? A war? Is he fighting in the air? Just all this. I was constantly fighting.
Right.
Because I was like, people are always making fun of my name. But when I transitioned into design, it all made sense.
Isn't it crazy how it works the same thing for me? Yeah. So my name means wealth has arrived. Right? And
fire.
Yeah. It's a my parents are Nigerian. It's a common Nigerian name, Jide is. I don't know if they went with the boilerplate, like, oh, well, first kid. Let's just call him wealth. Let's just say wealth has arrived. All right, let's just get it over with.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's, you know, but, like, that's what it means, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, same thing for me, like, when I was younger. Yeah, it was, people were like, your name is really strange. Not even just your name, but just, like, you're, like, I grew up in a white city, like, a white middle class Inland Empire city. So everyone was just like, this kid is different. He's weird. Like, it was like, even black kids were like, Jide, Asifesa, that's not, you know. And when I was younger, I'd be like, I wish my name was like Mike. Like, I wish I had a name like Christopher. That's a strong.
That's now all I like, wanted. That's all I wanted. Yeah, you know, exactly.
Like, but now I'm like, I love this name. This is amazing. Yeah. But
So wealth has come. Do you come from a large family?
I'm the oldest of three siblings. And the answer is yes. Yeah, I have a ton of, like, my extended family is, like...
It's deep.
It's deep. Yeah, there's deep, deep. It's deep, deep. Like, there's people I haven't met before that are, you know, that I share a lot of blood with. But, I mean, my parents having moved here when they did. My dad moved here in the early 70s.
Mm.
My mom, early 80s. And then...
For school or for profession?
My mom came for school.
Mm-hmm.
My dad came for profession, and everybody, you know, almost everybody that my aunts and uncles now, or even my, you know, in Nigerian families, like your dad's family friends that are older than you, those are your aunts and uncles too. And there's no difference in the way that you treat them or the way that your relationship is with them,
yeah,
whether they're your blood or not. And so all of my parents' peers, when they were young in Nigeria, they all left too, like either going to other parts of Africa, going to Europe. A lot of them came to the United States, and so I have so many people around the world that are my family, per se.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a nice little network of people that, you know, I can identify with and that, you know, I get my values from. And yeah, big family tree I have, for sure.
Got it. So we're here in Beverly Hills, but you are not from Los Angeles originally.
No.
You're from the Inland Empire.
Yeah.
So tell me about that growing up. How did that inform who you ultimately became, or how did it form who you are right now?
You know, like, I think it's like a lot of people. I know I grew up in a close proximity to Los Angeles, but it's not Los Angeles.
Right.
A lot of my friends that grew up in L.A. like, remind me all the time, you're not from L.A., like, you're from IE.
Which they tell me that all the time, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're not from Los Angeles. You're from Pasadena. But I'm super proud of, I'm always touting Altadena, Pasadena. I love
that's
where
favorite,
I come from.
My favorite place.
Like, bro, I love it. And people who've ever gone there, they're like, oh, I can understand why you feel that way. Like, yeah. When we met, we bonded conversation-wise over, like...
Where we live.
Altadena, Pasadena.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think for me, I grew up in Rancho Cucamonga, which is... There's nothing remarkable. I can't think of anything remarkable about Rancho Cucamonga. It's just a place that I think people went to raise kids And I didn't know any different growing up. I just liked it.
Right.
I was like, this is safe. This is cool. I can go to the park. I can have fun. I can get into trouble. And a lot of the time, I feel like not having the resources of Los Angeles, being able to go and see all these different things, and it made me be creative. I was bored. Like, I had to figure out ways to entertain myself or ways to, like, create things. And
absolutely,
I'm the same today. Like, the resourcefulness that I had when I was a kid is a lot of the reason why I'm able to do the type of work that I do now, because I have to just create something, no matter if there's something, like, there's a template before, or whether there's something that exists before, or whether I have to find out how to get it financed or whatever. Like, I just have to be able to create something no matter what, and I have no real excuses to do that. And so I do attribute that to, like, a lot of, like, my time growing up being like, there's nothing going on here. You have to make it.
Right. Well, what I do notice is that a lot of my friends who are, well, the thing is, we're all African, all of us. Mm-hmm. Every single person on the planet, because that's where it all originated from. But specifically, my people who have parents that are directly from the continent, mm-hmm. not that came through Mississippi and all that, like, they have just a different mindset. Mm-hmm. And so you said that your mother was here for school, your father came here professionally. How was being in that house in Rancho Cucamonga, how did that inform your professionalism to where you ultimately are right now?
I don't, like, I think back to how my parents, like, when, like, I'm...
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
My mom had me when she was 25.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was 30. And, like, growing up and seeing how they were as essentially a young couple mm-hmm. and young professionals, like, my mom got her first job when I was in grade school. Like, she was, like, I remember I went to my mom's college graduation. And so, like, seeing the way that she was able to hustle with two kids at the time and then she had a third. But, like, I think back now and I'm like.
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Like, I don't know how the hell you did that. Like, she was working her ass off every single day. But to me, it was just second nature. Like, it was just what you did. Like, yeah, you got to, like, raise these three kids, check their homework, cook, you know, clean, you know, go to work. She worked an hour from where we lived, too. She would, like, drive to a train station, take the train down to her work, and then do the reverse every single day. No excuses, no complaints, nothing. On the weekends, she was working the same thing, like making sure that we had fun. Like, it's incredible. And so just seeing that, that was normal. That was like, my mom was like that and all her friends were like that. All my aunts and uncles were like that. My dad was like that. And my dad had a business growing up. He was an engineer and it was just him. He was working mostly primarily with like school districts and he'd work with like local hospitals and setting up computing systems. But it was just him. And so if you had a good month or a bad month, it didn't fucking matter. Like, you have to be the same, consistent for your family and yourself, and you don't have other employees. There's no paycheck that you get. And me as a kid, I'm just like, that's just normal. And now I'm like, that's pressure. Like,
right.
That's crazy.
Because you're witnessing all this, so even if you don't feel you're picking up the importance of work. And also, exactly. Also consistency, too.
Yes.
Because it's no excuse, because I literally had the three of you all, and I'm getting on a train or a bus going an hour away
yes.
to go to work.
Yeah, and that was just normal. And to this day, I look back and I'm like, I don't have to do all that stuff. But I still try to work with the same type of discipline. But I mean, the pressure's not the same as they had. And so for me, I'm really thankful to have that in my background of like, this is the standard essentially, right? Like,
wow.
You have to be able to do that. And so I mean, I don't have kids yet, but when I do have kids, like. I hope to instill in them the same things my parents instilled in me by example.
By example. Not by words.
Exactly.
Yeah. My mother used to always say, don't say it to me. Just show me. Don't tell me how good you're going to be. Just be it.
Yeah.
And that's it. So transitioning from that, what set of circumstances led you to say, you know what? You know, Rancho is nice, but I want to go to Los Angeles. Or I guess the better question is, when you left Rancho, was Los Angeles the first place you went or was it somewhere else?
I didn't really have a, like, geographic location that I wanted to go to. I just knew the type of life that I wanted to be able to have exposure to, essentially. And I just knew I wanted to see things outside of what my local surroundings were. Right. And I moved out of my house when I was 17, and I just moved down the street. I moved to Orange County. Mm-hmm. But I was able to meet people that were able to connect, like, a large part of, like, society in the world that I didn't have any exposure to by people that I met through college. So I met, like, one of my mentors, his name is Pat Tenori. He's a founder of a skate company called Ruka. He actually gave me my first job in design. But I met him, and he just kind of, like, he really changed the way I saw the world and the way I saw the, like, the type of career that I wanted to have was not based necessarily in, like, design or clothes. It was based in community. He was a person that built a community that touched every part of his interests and, like, his friends' interests. And, like, he hired his friends from high school. He, like, and he made a bunch of money. He was able to be very, very successful at it. Yes. But his way. He's like, I have these. He was interested in, like, surfing. Cool. So we're going to have a surf team. And he liked MMA and MMA team. And we're going to have all this stuff that was an extension of his life. So for me, when I left Rancho, I wanted to be able to figure out, like, okay, didn't know what I wanted to do professionally, but I knew what I wanted to be able to, like, I knew I wanted to be able to build my own world and live in that world. I didn't want to have a 9-to-5. I didn't want to be a slave. I didn't want to, like, have to, you know, enjoy my life on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so moving, going to Orange County and seeing, you know, people like Pat or other people that had, that countless people that were able to help and show me so many different things, it kind of helped me, like, kind of realize what I was seeking when I left Rancho, I left high school.
Yeah. So I know we jumped out of Rancho, but I just want to step back into Rancho just for 1 second.
You gotta get used to the tangents, man. I'm a tangent guy.
No, it's all good. I'm fine with that. Like, it's wisdom that you're giving somebody who's listening. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm learning more about you as well. You being in Rancho, was there a multitude of students that looked like you? If it wasn't a multitude, how did that make you feel?
I never thought about that. There definitely wasn't. Rancho's predominantly a white city.
Yeah.
Not many, many black people there. Very few African people. A lot of them that were African were my cousins. So it was like,
right, you know, but, right.
But no, there wasn't. And so for me, I didn't really seek to prove anything. I didn't have any kind of, this is for my racial identity, me doing these types of things or achieving these things. I just want to do it for myself and for my friends, essentially. Like, that was kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that gave you, so you being one of very few, it taught you the importance of, like, being able to navigate different environments.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that served you well.
We have to do it every day.
Absolutely. Yeah, every day. Absolutely. So, all right. So now we're out of Rancho. You're in Orange County. And you're working with Rob at his company, correct?
Pat,
I apologize. Mm-hmm. You're out of Rancho, you're working with Pat. Who was your first client?
Oh, like on my own?
On your own.
My first client was a company called Flavor Unit.
Queen Latifah?
Queen Latifah, yes.
What?
it was Shakim. Shout out to Shakim. I love Shakim.
Wow.
Yeah, Shakim gave me my first gig. I had just moved to LA. I was blowing through my savings. I was trying to start my company. I had this, you know, my rent was minimal, but I was living in Silver Lake. I was doing all shit. And I was like, all right, I can't go back to working for anybody. I got to figure it out myself. And then Shakim was like, yeah, come over here. This is like, yeah. And then,
did you all have, like, a lot of conversations, or was he just like, he met you on Monday?
Not really. And, like, my guy Rolando, shout out to Rolando, he introduced me to him and was just like, oh, they need some help on some stuff. Like, you should just link with him. And so I had one conversation, and he was like, you know, all right, yeah, pull up. Like, come in once in a while, blah, blah, blah. It was nothing to him. He was just like, yeah. But he gave me my first shot, and I was like, wow, I can actually probably try to do this. And I was just so hungry. I was like, I'll do anything. Yeah. Any design work you need, just give it to me and I'll just do, you know?
Right.
And from there, I was able to build off of that. I wasn't working with him that long, but it did show me that, like, oh, you can do this. And, like, he gave me some game. Like, I remember one time I presented to him, and he was just, like, sitting back listening. And he was like, do you want the business or not? Ooh. I was like, oh, shit, what?
Yeah,
he was like, this presentation's not good enough. Like, do this, come back. I was like, cool. And then I did, and I came back, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, I can self-regulate these type of things, but, like, you're on your own now. This is not, like, there's no, like...
There's no safety net.
There's no safety net here. And he kind of told me that. He showed me that, for sure, with his first job. Right?
Wow.
He gave me a lot of grace, though, too. He's a great guy.
Right? What did you learn from that experience?
I just learned that there's a different type of professionalism when you're doing it on your own. Like...
Say that again.
Yeah, like...
For real.
The stakes are always extremely high. Like, the stakes are always, like, if this doesn't go well, this could be the last thing that you do. And, you know, for us, like, there's not, like...
No several cool. chances.
Dude, yeah, no, it doesn't exist for us.
Yeah, like, it's a Todd Bridges versus Robert Downey Jr. situation.
Exactly.
You didn't hear from Todd Bridges after Different Strokes.
Exactly.
Robert Downey has gotten into trouble several times, and somehow... This brother is still Iron Man.
Yeah. And that's why it's important for us to be able to help the next person out. Because
agreed.
If I was presenting to someone that wasn't like a Shaquem, they'd be like, okay, cool, that was good. Silence. He was like, I care enough to tell you to do this way. Come back. Oh, that was good. Great. Keep going. Oh, that was good. That was better. Keep going. We need to be able to give that to the next people. Because the worst thing you can do is be like, yeah, continue to be average.
Yeah. The cultural nuance is what he helped you with.
Exactly.
So from there, what did you do?
Man, from there, I was just a machine. I started working with a ton of different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool because I was working in so many different disciplines that I was not trained in. And so I was, out of necessity, I was learning on the fly. And I had a lot of...
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about? Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
People that were integral to my being able to learn these different trades and stuff, and I'm thankful for all of them. I think back to them often, the ones that I don't speak to anymore, but I worked extensively with TDE and Day Free.
Mm-hmm.
For the next few years, and that was just life-changing. Like, being around people like him and Kendrick and brilliant people, I can't describe how important it was for me and how interesting it was to be able to see that journey.
So you literally saw it from the ground up? Or was it already?
At State Farm, we're committed to uplifting Black futures. In collaboration with organizations like 100 Black Men and National Urban League, State Farm provides high school students with the opportunity to learn and apply best practice strategies for saving and investing, all while offering academic support, life skills, and exposure to college access programs to prepare these students for life after high school. Check out 100blackmen.org and nul.org to donate and learn more. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Or was it already like there and you just came in and you just added a fashion context to what TDE is and was?
Oh, it was already there. They were already, I mean, at that time, that was like that was right as To Pimp a Butterfly was coming
mm-hmm.
out or after
mm-hmm.
coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was already clearly a genius before that, but and what they were doing was genius. Like, not even just, you know, Kendrick as an artist, but, you know, Dave as a steward of creativity and someone who's just been, like, brilliant himself.
Right.
So being able to see what they were doing and be involved in any capacity was just so important for me. And so,
right.
And then from there, yeah, it was easier to get other kind of opportunity there, so I was able to kind of pick and choose.
Absolutely, yeah. It was.
Yeah, it was nice, and so.
But before you go on, what were some of your favorite pieces during that era? Like, I mean, like you had the caricatures. Like, I know you remember those old 80s, like Chicago Bears, Los Angeles Lakers. They would have the big head. They would be animated. They had big heads and little body. Yeah, like you did that for TDE.
No, I didn't do that. My friend Jeff did that.
Okay.
That was my guy that I met. Again, this is why it's so cool to have, like, I'm not an old head, I don't think, in the game, but like I've been around for so long. Like that guy Jeff was someone that I met probably 15 years ago. And so I was like, I want to do this type of style, but I can't draw. I can't draw like that. I can't illustrate. Oh, I'm gonna call Jeff. And I was like, reach out to Jeff. He's like, nice to hear from you, first of all. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And yes. So like there was a lot of that of like, all right, let me pull back from my history and make people from my past or people that I just knew and maybe reconnect with them or also just like work with them. And so that was kind of what that was. Because although I've done a lot of graphic design, it's not my passion. I did it out of necessity.
But you're so good at it though. But it's still not your passion.
It's not my passion. Never.
But keep in mind, Jade, it's in the eye of the beholder. Uh-huh. I know you feel that you're not good at it, but like me looking at like the Damn for Nike, the tour merch where the Damn was like sliding.
No, I know I'm good like, at it. I'm good bro, at it. Come on. It's not my passion. Come on. So it's not something I'm like, oh, I can't wait. Like, it's not something I cut my teeth on, but there's some stuff like, I think the one that everyone really likes is there was like a, we did like this yellow t-shirt. It was like, it had a silhouette of Kendrick. He was on some, his Kung Fu wave.
Yes.
And it was just a silhouette of him doing a Kung Fu kick or something. I don't remember what it was.
Mm-hmm. Kung Fu Kenny.
Yeah. And I was at my office at Atwater, and I was like, all right, I'm going to just make this vibe, and then it just really worked. People went crazy over that shirt. That's the most successful thing I've ever done in my career, graphic wise for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, can you give me like one of my favorite projects, and I've shared this with you before, mm-hmm. was the Kendrick collection with Nike, mm-hmm. and how it was all centered around the Black family, mm-hmm. and just like visually how warm and welcoming that the whole campaign was to me, it was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? How did that whole thing come together? And most importantly, is that something that you see as one of your best pieces of work? Or is that just like, that's light work?
No, neither. I think I like it, but I don't know. I mean, that came out, they made the shoe, Kendrick and Dave made that shoe. And then afterwards, when we were working with Nike on the campaign, I was like, it's already there. Like, let's just make a clean Black family environment and show the shoes in the best light. And so it was, we worked with Noah Wilson. I'm fucking up his name. Noah Wilson at Nike, who's, mm-hmm. he's really sick. We just put that together really quick. There was some other stuff we wanted to do to expand it that didn't get made, but it would have been crazy. And I'll tell you about it later.
Oh, okay. No more.
Yeah, it would have been crazy.
I think the thing that is what was so amazing about it was that it was centered around a Black family. Mm-hmm. I always tell people in relation to like Native Americans, you know, the decimation of them is so real, mm-hmm. that like I've never seen a Native American family walking through Whole Foods, mm-hmm. or walking through the mall, yeah. or walking through the airport. Similar, like as it applies to like the Black family, it's very rare that you see every person who's supposed to be there represented. Father, mother, and all the kids are there. Like, so the fact that you all made this beautiful collection that was so easy, so good to look at, but it also was set to the backdrop of a Black family. That's why I thought it was phenomenal. And I don't even know if you even like saw that. Well, obviously you saw it. You did it.
Yeah, we saw it. It's kind of, isn't it crazy though that's remarkable? Like seeing a nuclear family is like, yes. wow. It's like,
yes.
I mean, for me, that's just normal. That's just how we live.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. But working with, you know, Nike, like, was there anything special that came from that experience? Or was it just like, you know, we're doing this, now on to the next one?
Man. I don't know. I think I don't stop to like smell the roses a little bit. We just move on. Wow. It was like, cool, it was done. It's out. Let's keep going. Yeah.
So then you go from that project. Is Reigning Champ next in line, Or were there several other projects in between, you know, that and then Reigning Champ?
So Reigning Champ was after that for sure. But I think at that time that we were doing stuff with Reigning Champ. Those guys have been my friends for years.
Again, great product, bro.
Back to the Orange County days.
Yeah.
I met, shout out to my Adam Mills. I met Adam Mills when I was working in Orange County. He was also working for he was doing sales in Canada for the same company that I was working for.
Wow.
Years later, he goes there and I doing other things and I'm like, yo, let's do something together. And then, yeah, that's how it came about. And so after that, yeah, we started to work on something that I really love. That company is near and dear to me. And yeah, actually the next one comes out next week, I think, or in 2 weeks.
Your next collab?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was there for the first one, and what impressed me most was that, and this I feel only happens to Black creatives. Mm. Whenever we create something and we put Black people in it, the larger population feels that it's just for Black people.
Yeah.
But when it comes to us and we see like Tom Ford or Polo or Ralph Lauren, like we imagine ourselves in it because it's something to aspire to. Yeah. And what I admired about your launch, I mean, like it was United Nations in there, bro. Like it was all different types of people representing all different types of environments.
Yeah.
Like racial backdrops, sexual identities, like everybody was there and everybody was cool. Like, do you attribute, like, what do you think it is about your design aesthetic that, like, attracts everyone? Because you got, like, you know, like, hood dudes all the way up to, like, you know, somebody who's leaving for Dartmouth and everybody in between.
I don't even know if it's the design because nowadays there's no people. You have people like Tyler, the Creator, who were, like in when I was growing up, that wasn't a thing. Like, I remember.
Well, to be free like he is?
Yeah. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's the way it should be. I remember when I was
absolutely.
When I was very young, my cousin Yomi, shout out to my cousin Yomi,
mm-hmm.
he lived in San Diego, and I must have been like in like third grade or something, and I went to him, and he was showing me music, and he was like, yo, like, he gave me a Camp Lo CD.
And I was like, I love yo. Camp Lo.
No, a Camp Lo tape. He said, listen to this tape, and then when you come, like, and listen to it, and then come back and bring it back to me, like, he gave me Camp Lo, he gave me some old Wu-Tang, and then he gave me a tape by this band called The Descendants.
Yes.
And a band called Pennywise. And I was like, we don't listen to this type of music. It was like punk music. He was like, why not? And I was like, okay. And I took it home and I studied it. I was like, yo, Yomi's so cool. And he was skating at the time too. So I was skating, playing basketball, listening to hip-hop music and punk. Today, that's not remarkable. Back then, people were like, you're out of your fucking mind.
Right.
Like, you can't do this. I had a teacher tell me, you're Black. You can't skate.
Are you serious?
Yes. A white teacher told me that. And yeah. I know who he is, too. I'll tell you after this. He's a...
This is in Rancho. This happened.
Yeah. But not only... Like, Black people were telling me that, too. Like, yo, like, I was... My parents weren't home. I was on the basketball team. And I had to skate to practice. Because my parents... I couldn't drive. And I would pull up on my skateboard, and they'd be like, what are you doing? But anyways... That's how I grew up being like, we can do anything. Like,
literally,
why would
anything.
We limit ourselves? Like, and so my friend group and like the things that I'm into, like, there's no boundaries to it. Like, so if I'm gonna have a party or if I'm gonna have anything, it's for the world. Like, I feel like I understand the importance of like, you know, having our stuff and being like, yo, like this is for us by us. Mm-hmm. But also, it's important too to just be like, yo, like everybody can appreciate Black art. You know what I'm saying?
Because everybody does.
Everybody does.
Bro, I always say. Everybody wants to be Black until the police comes. That's everyone, bro.
Fact.
They do. Yeah. Everybody knows our history better than our history. Yeah. This ain't a history lesson. I'm not going deep into that. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was in high school, I went to John Muir in Pasadena. And like it was a very, very integrated school. Yeah. So you had kids from all over the city. You had kids that lived in La Cañada, La Crescenta, yep. Altadena, Pasadena. Kids from the King's Manor, which is like equivalent to like what our project is. But like... What was beautiful about that was that you got a chance in chemistry class or in geometry class to talk to every type of person. You had to navigate all these different situations because mm-hmm. you had gangbangers there, but you also had people who were going to MIT. Like, it was incredible. But I remember polo team, it was there may have been 2 to 3 black kids on that team. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of my basketball teammates said to Jeff, who was like one of like the top guys in CIF that year, he was like, "Yo, Jeff, stay black." Kind of like mocking him because he was like on the polo team.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Bro, you shouldn't do that." And he was like, "Bro, like, black people don't play water polo." I said, "You're literally looking at a black person playing water polo." Mm-hmm. I connected with a friend of mine from chemistry class, and he was a skateboarder.
Yeah.
A dude by the name of Michael Gonzalez. Shout out to Michael. Mm-hmm. And he had a buddy named Perez and another guy named Marco, and they all skated. They were Latino. One dude was Cuban. Mm-hmm. And they hung with all white dudes. Mm-hmm. And, like, I started skateboarding. My first skateboard was a Guerrero, Paul Peralta. Mm-hmm. And, like, I remember because I, like, my family went through different trajectories. We lived like a very high middle class life. Mm-hmm. And then things got rough financially, and then we ended up, like, you know, in like a 1-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
Like, things got very real for us, and we recovered. Mm-hmm. My mother and father split. But I remember when I was skateboarding, like, this was after we were in the upper middle class. We were like living on 620 North Oakland in Pasadena, which was it was everything on one block. You had a hood family, but you also had a doctor who lived on the block who was a Hell's Angel. Right. And also a Latin family that owned, like, it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But I remember riding my skateboard, and my dudes would be like, "Why are you doing this? Why are you skateboarding?" I'd be like, "Because my friends do it." And a lot of those friends were African-American, mm-hmm. who questioned what I was doing. And when I think about, like, that set of friends, like, a couple of them went to prison.
Yeah.
A couple of them got caught in that inner city situation that a lot of us fall prey to, mm-hmm. the gang banging, the drugs and all that. Whereas on the flip side, my guys who were skateboarding, they just had a different mindset. Like, their fathers owned businesses. They lived in these big ass houses. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a completely different world. So to bring both of those worlds together, it just teaches you through osmosis how to navigate, because that made it very easy for me to like talk to. I can talk to anybody from a Klansman to a gang member.
Yeah.
And I feel you can too, because of that upbringing. Mm. And I remember listening to Morrissey and The Cure and Sting, but also listening to like NWA and Run DMC and PM Dawn and mm-hmm. EPMD. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to be brought up around different people.
Yeah.
Because you get different experiences.
Yeah.
That being said, mm-hmm. whenever you're going to work for a brand or work alongside a brand, what is the first things or a couple of things that run through your mind?
Money.
That's right.
How much money? Where's the, no, I'm just kidding.
No. You're just serious.
Yeah, no, I'm not serious. It depends on what it is. Like, honestly, sometimes I'm just like, "Oh, this is a job. I'm just
right. gonna do this.
I'm gonna put in my hours, I'm gonna put in the work, I'm gonna do the best job I possibly can."
Right.
And sometimes it's just like, "Oh, I'm feeling this. This is like,
What's poppin', guys? It's Jay Jonah here from Blowin' Smoke. If you're a fan of fun, insightful, and breakthrough conversations, then be sure to check out and subscribe to the Blowin' Smoke podcast, a show that covers life experiences and firsthand testimonies from some of your biggest names in your favorite industries. And it's all brought to you exclusively right here by the Revolt Podcast Network, anchored in hip-hop, powered by creators.
This one, this is like, this speaks to me, you know?
Right.
But either way, whether it's the former or latter path. It's figuring out how I can use my set of tools to do the best job possible for whatever someone's asking of me. Right. The former is easier to do because it's very second nature. I know exactly what it is. But the first one is, it's more preparation, a little bit more research, a little bit more, "Hey, let's give me set up a meeting," and blah, blah, blah. And, but, yeah, it's essentially just like, all right, this is the task. Let me put the toolkit together and figure out how I can, you know, accomplish it.
And have there ever been companies that have come to you where you're like, "There is absolutely no way."
Yes.
And but then you meet with them and you're like, "Wow, I was completely wrong about you all." Yeah, let's do it.
I don't work with a lot of different people.
Right.
Because I just like the people that I work with a lot of people for a long time, and I have a lot of long-standing relationships, and I only have 24 hours in a day.
Right.
So it doesn't happen a lot. There's one company that approached me 2 years ago to do something that I was like, "I can't do this."
Right. Right.
I don't even know if I can say.
If you feel like you shouldn't, I wouldn't. But if you can, you should. Don't do it, Jide.
It was a company that made a vaccine. I won't tell you which company.
What?
But I was like,
do merch?
I don't even want to get into it. But they were they led with the money. Like, here's what we're thinking about.
And that bag was real. Oh, that bag was real.
Okay. And then here's the ask. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny, though, because I thought about it. And I was like, well, maybe if I just, I'll post it, and then I'll go on Close Friends and be like, yo, I did this for the bag. I'm like, no.
This black anti-penile drug. But I got paid $50 million to do it.
Yo, this is it's eugenics, but still, though, like, it's, wait, hold on, let me explain.
Oh, my God. So you, to this point, we've talked about all of these, I mean, just culture points that you've been a part of.
Yeah.
And all these people that you've had, you know, in your life who, like, helped you creatively, mm-hmm. all the brands. Like, at what point did you build up the power to know, all right, it's Jide time. It's time for me to focus solely on me, not anybody else, and focus on that and go and do it.
It was always the goal. I think even talking back to when I was leaving, like, my parents' home when I was 17, it was like I always wanted to be able to create my world, not exist in someone else's, essentially. I mean, even if it wasn't my world, it's making a world for me and people like myself, right? It was able to, you know, have the Shaquem conversation with the next version of Jide, or, you know, give the Descendants tape to the next version of Jide, you know, be able to do those types of things. And I wanted to be able to build that world myself. So all the stuff I did up until, you know, I was able to just say, like, I'm kind of done doing stuff for other people was almost in preparation for that. It was just getting my reps up and being able to say, like, I've seen myself succeed in these forums, and I've built my voice, and I've done, you know, the research, study, to have the wins and losses, to understand what success looks like. And yeah, I was always the goal, you know.
Right.
And so there was just a point when I was just like, all right, I've seen it. You know,
now
I think when people talk about, like, being like confident, or like, oh, that guy's good, you know, it's like, sometimes it's like, no, that guy's just practiced enough. Like, it's not like
his reps. He put in 10,000 hours.
Good. Like, LeBron James is so good at basketball. Like, yeah, he fucking plays every day. And he's fucking, he's a genius level athlete. He's a genius level person.
Yes.
But, like, he's a genius level athlete who's just done the work. He's been playing in the gym before you saw him for hours. Like, it's that. It's like, yeah, I can be confident, or I can feel like I have the tools to be successful because I've just done the work and I've failed a lot. Mm-hmm. I've failed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot. So I'm like, I got it. Like, wow. I get it. I understand.
Yeah. And in reference to, you know, you going through the process of failing a lot, you look at failure as what? You look at failure as, like, you know, preparation for the next time? Or do you look at failure as like, oh, yeah, that was, I'm not doing that no more. Or I need to fine tune this so I don't fail. How do you look at failure?
It's everything. Whenever I try, I mean, it's less frequent now, obviously, because I just know I'm a lot smarter now. But whenever I do something that I feel good about and it doesn't work out, I love it. I'm like, oh, wow. Opportunity for growth. I'm getting better. Because most of the time, it's good. Like, it worked out. But growth isn't the same in those situations for me, you know? That's why I like to put myself in uncomfortable situations, because I'm like, this is not comfortable for a reason.
Right.
I'm not ready.
Right.
I'm not ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so we have, like, the world had this period of COVID. Where I can't speak for you specifically, but for me, it was the alignment period of sitting still.
Yeah.
And when you sit still, you can really, like, if you're utilizing your time properly, that's what my mother would always say to me, use your time properly. Mm-hmm. Like, if you use your time properly during the pandemic, you should have been able to, like, devise a game plan on when the world opens back up, this is what I'm going to do.
Mm.
What was your experience through the pandemic in terms of creativity, in terms of what your place is in the design ethosphere? Like what was that?
It was a crazy, unprecedented thing.
Correct.
That was. Even now I look back and I'm like, do we all understand what happened or what is still happening? Like,
yeah. Because it's still going on. People still getting COVID.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The world just stopped and people were just dying. I was looking at data on TV every day, just at pie charts and graphs of, like, oh, these many people died and this is happening. And then here's the scene at New York City's hospital. Like, this is nuts.
Right.
But anyways, back to your point. I think for me, I use the time of this kind of I feel like during the pandemic, and this is, I mean, the pandemic was obviously a terrible, it is and was a terrible time, and there's nothing, it was just a scary time for humanity in general.
Right.
But I do think that, you know, God forbid, I mean, if you were able to get through it, you know, and retain your livelihood, retain your health, all that stuff, it could have been a time where you could use the ability to be still and sit down for growth. Like, I really did that. Like, my calendar before and after was a lot of, like, you wake up at this time, gym this time, meeting this time, eat lunch.
Regimented.
Like, I'm regimented.
Regimented, yeah.
And that's not great all the time. And so during that, I was like, I'm just going to be home all day. And like, my brother moved into my house, and I was like, this is incredible. I can just hang out with my brother every day. I haven't done this
since you were like 11.
Yeah. Like.
So were you cognizant of what you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to FaceTime my friend that I haven't talked to that lives over here. And I'm just going to like, go to the gym and like work on my body, and I'm gonna like, hey, like I want to learn how to like do web design. I'm gonna just do that. Like I had time to do stuff because I didn't have to be anywhere. I didn't have the obligations of my flights and meetings,
right,
and deadlines. It was really crazy to be able to be in a time where the world just kind of stopped spinning a little bit. Right. And I'm thankful for it a little bit.
Absolutely. You say that with trepidation. Why?
Just because there was so much pain for so many people. And I didn't lose any family members. I didn't even get COVID until like a couple months ago.
Right.
I don't know. So much pain. I say it with trepidation because I don't want to make light of the situation and how terrible it was for humanity. But
correct.
For me, it was a period where I really got to know myself. I almost felt like I was introduced to myself during the stillness of that time. I feel like I got to know who I was.
Absolutely.
What I liked, what I didn't like.
Yeah,
you know, I was able to connect with people. I was able to apologize to people. I was able to forgive people. It was like just a beautiful period for me.
Because you got time to sit still.
Yeah, sit still.
That's amazing, man. That's a great answer. Jesus. Yeah. So the world opens back up, and I guess during that time had you started the work with Reebok during COVID, or was that post COVID where you created all this beautiful imagery?
That was definitely during COVID. So, man, shout out to Kirby, man. That's my guy. I'm gonna see Kirby tomorrow, actually. Kirby got the job at Reebok and essentially called me and said, come with me to Reebok. And that was probably, I don't know when it was, maybe mid-2020. And I know it was during COVID because on my first flight to Boston, which was probably like October of 2020,
nobody
I was so scared. I went to Ace Hardware on Foothill in La Crescenta.
You got the Milwaukee joints?
I bought anything that could cover anything. I was like, I'm not going to get COVID on this trip. Because I looked crazy, bro. Let me tell you something, how scared I was. I had everything on. I looked like I was in District 9.
Oh, my goodness. Are you serious?
Yeah, man. I was like, yo, I got to go to Boston. This is going to be scary. But yeah.
And you get to Boston, and it's what? Like what was... What was Reebok's point of view, or were you and Kirby stepping in with like, this is what the point of view was going to be?
Yeah, it was that. We kind of came in with an agenda, and then they were cool. Yeah.
And was there anything special that you learned from that experience?
Oh, I learned so much. Learned so much, yeah.
Anything you could share, or you just like, that's the yes, yes, y'all. Go to the third verse.
I think, part of what I learned in the pandemic is about what I wanted to do with my life professionally was I love product so much. I really do love product. But I more importantly love community. And like I do love building the world. So mm-hmm. I didn't work on any product with Reebok at all. I only worked on campaigns and I only worked on marketing and I only worked on figuring out how to connect what they were making to people like myself. Right. And that was it. And it was like, this is incredible. I don't have to make any product. I don't have to, like, and I did stuff. I still worked in product with other people, not, you know, but like with that company, I was only doing marketing. I was only doing campaign work. And I was only learning how to direct and write. And I was only finding the DPs that I like to work with and the production. Like, I was able to build that. But I still have, like, I work on stuff all the time, and I'm like, these are people that I met through the vessel at Reebok, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm thankful for Kirby and everyone at Reebok for just giving me so much grace and just letting me
develop.
Letting me develop and work the way I did. And I feel like I had, I mean, those are some of the best times of my career, being able to work that way. It was so fun. It was like summer camp every day.
Wow.
It was so fun.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of you, speaking of your work, a lot of your work is very dark, but it's like extremely beautiful. Mm. And when we talk about, like, you know, something as basic as a graphic tee, like your execution and the colors you use, they're just primary colors, just, you know, black tee or white tee or cream tee or eggshell tee. Mm-hmm. Like, what informs that visual and also that design process?
One thing about the way that I see beauty is I like things to be as simple and primitive as can be. And so for me, like, and this is not, I don't know if this is a strength or a weakness, but I see like a shirt that has a bunch of shit on it, and I'm like, that didn't
track stuff.
I need to take what could be out from there. Like, what could we kind of eliminate from this thing that would have made it nicer? And, you know, like, I gravitate towards natural colors, and I gravitate towards, you know, like primitive shapes, even like, you know, like some of the art I'm working on right now is just literally shapes, tones, textures, and it's like, some people would just be like, I'm good, but I'm like, this is incredible. This is the best work I've ever done.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so for me, like, you saying that work is like dark and beautiful, like that's kind of what the world is to me. It's that balance of, like, you know, good and bad, light and dark, like, and so yeah, I think I try to capture that in the way that I kind of approach visuals.
Well, from the outside looking in, like, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a teacher because I had great teachers growing up.
I wanted to be a dentist, which would have been horrible.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, so what's so unique about what you just said is that looking at your work, specifically the work you did with Reigning Champ, like, I felt that you wanted to be like a writer because you always have these riddles or you have these words.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, what informs that process? Like, why are you, because you're like, you use beautiful fonts, which you alluded to like a minute ago, but like, you have these riddles and these sayings. Like, where does that come from? Because that's not a dentist. That's an orator or that's, you know, a magnificent author. Like, where does that come from?
It comes from, I do read a lot. I do love literature, and I do love to hear people's thoughts. I love to hear how people interpret stuff too. But it also comes from just like, I'm obsessed with film. I'm obsessed with film. I'm obsessed with television. I'm obsessed with people telling stories.
Specific genres or just all? The whole pie?
Just all. The amount of Harry Potter I watch is ridiculous. But also, like the amount of, but yeah, I watch everything. You know, like I watch everything from, like, you know, old Hitchcock to, like, yeah, Harry Potter. Like, I like everything all in between. It's all beauty to me. It's all really good.
Wow. So you said that the goal was to always have your own brand. Now you're in that space where, like, we're about to have this collection.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think I.
Like, well, you know what? Let me rephrase the question. Mm. In reference to your brand, because, like, people don't need to know the nuts and bolts of, like, who's helping unless you want to share that. But, like, who does your brand speak to? Who is it for? How would you explain the design aesthetic?
I mean, I think that you're able to kind of surmise what my personal taste is.
Absolutely.
And, like, what my community is,
mm-hmm.
being everyone, the same people you saw at that party. And, like, it's my version of my aesthetic in a democratized fashion. I want everyone to be able to wear it and access it. And whether or not you're buying it, too. Like, for me, the beauty of, like, what I've been doing for the past couple of years is there's no point in time when I was making something that you could purchase.
Hmm.
And, like, there's a lot of companies, even, like, brands I love, like, especially brands I loved when I was younger. Like, I couldn't afford to buy Raf Simons, but I love Raf Simons. And, like, Raf Simons influenced me in so many different ways, or tons of brands. And I never purchased their stuff because I couldn't. But their influence on me and the way that I was able to, like, engage with them
was profound.
Profound. without ever giving them a dollar. There was no commerce involved with it. And so for me, that's the beauty of it. Like, I want to be able to make stuff that people can live with and be able to interact with, whether or not they're spending money with me. That's not the purpose. The purpose is the community, you know? And so that's the goal with what I'm trying to do here. And so we're taking our time with it. You know, I'm a measure twice, cut once type of person. And so we're taking our time with it. But yeah, there's some fun stuff coming out for sure. There's like, I've always wanted to make shoes. And so like, we're doing a lot of shoes, and we're doing a collaboration with a certain footwear brand that will come out next August with the fall collection.
Incredible.
I mean, if you know my work, you'll get a sense. You probably have a good idea of what it will look like, but it'll just be a little bit more of a refined and more substantial version of that.
You know, what's interesting about this platform is, I mean, what's interesting about the measurable specifically is that, like, you know, a lot of people ask, like, what is it going to be about? Is it going to be about just fashion? And I'm like, well, it's like, that's the overarching theme, because naturally I'm in fashion.
Yeah.
But in reference to the audience at large, like, for people who are just looking to gain information about a specific guest or about a specific environment that they're not involved in. But you also have some people who are just interested in maybe switching lanes and jumping into a profession that they know nothing about. Like, to have guests like you who come and just explain it so eloquently is like perfect. Yeah. And I thank you for being here.
Yeah.
I could sit. Whenever we have conversations, they're never like 15 minutes.
No.
They're always like, yeah, like they can go an hour, sometimes an hour and like damn near 2 hours.
Yeah.
But the main thing I want to know is, you know, for anybody who's looking to get into the game or make that transition into like this fashion thing, what specific information would you share with them if you had like a sentence to share?
Oh my God.
Is it that much knowledge?
I don't know, man. To think about the type of environments and scenarios that I've had gone through to get to my perspective has just been so, it's just by chance. I think that what I would say is, allow yourself to be vulnerable. Allow yourself to learn. Allow yourself to when the Shaquem of your life comes to you and tells you that you're doing wrong, listen to them. Listen to them and thank them. You know, like, a lot of people are like, oh man, this guy's a hater. Like, no. Sometimes, like, you can tell people.
He's putting you on game, bro.
Yeah. So yes. I would say listen to people. Like, just listen. Just be a sponge. Be a sponge. And it's not like, all right, I finished my semester of school, I know it. No. You're learning every single day. Like, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I'm learning every day. Every time I talk to you, I learn something new. Coming here today, I learned something new about you, about myself, about the room we're in, like, everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like, just be a sponge. Like, really, 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 really take in the good and the bad. If someone tells you that you're good, thank them. If someone tells you that you're bad, thank them. And just keep going.
Right.
You know?
What would the current Jide tell the younger Jide that was skateboarding to practice, listening to punk music?
That kid, I would have strangled him. I don't know. I would have slapped him up really good. I don't know. I mean, I would have told him the same thing. Be quiet.
That's incredible.
Be quiet.
Be quiet.
Be quiet. Just listen.
Just be still.
Just listen. Just listen. Just relax. Just relax. And I did a lot of that, you know. Sometimes I didn't. But best advice you can have is just be still. Just take in the information, process it, and then act. That's it.
Mm-hmm. The very last thing I want to touch on is I received a incredible package that I opened up. It was this orange sweatshirt.
Oh, yeah. Everyone loves that fucking hoodie.
Well, I'll tell you, I wear that thing all the time. So, like, I opened this thing up, and it is uniquely you. Mm-hmm. And you and I have had debates about this because you're like, But I'm like, no, this still fits in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
How did that come about? And did you enjoy the process? And is it something that you do again?
You know what? This is another thing that's really funny. It's like, it came about through the same way that me and you talk. We don't talk about clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I might hit you and be like, yo, those pants are hard that you made. But we don't talk about, like, when I talk to you, it's not like, oh, like, did you see that collect? At all, literally.
Right.
We just talk about life and, like, yo, what are you up to? How are your kids? Like,
Right.
Where you going to go eat? Like,
correct.
That's,
correct.
So even when we're in Paris, even when we're at Fashion Week, like, I don't talk to you about fashion. I'm not like, just go to that show. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, we're just walking around. Yeah.
Are you having fun?
Yeah.
Are you tired?
Right.
How's your wife? Is she having fun? You know what I'm saying? It's nothing.
Right.
So even speaking of Fashion Week, I met Daniel at Fashion Week a couple years ago, and it was after I saw the movie Widows. And so, Ravenue, everybody, right? I'm like, yo, like, you're crazy. Like, mm-hmm. Your performance scared me. And he was right. Like, yo, thank you.
Right.
So like, we were just talking about, you know, just like, and then you get into like, just talking about like, how, who are you, blah, blah. And then like, you know, he's like, I'm gonna call you. So he calls me and we just start talking. And then ever since then, we just talk like the same way with you. Like, he'll call me and we'll just talk for like an hour. Not about work, not about clothes, not about what movie right. He's shooting, nothing. It's just right. Like, how are you? Like, what are you doing? What are you seeing? Like, give me advice. I'm giving him advice. He's sending me stuff. I'm sending him stuff.
Right.
Oh, this is cool. This is trash. Oh, this is. Oh, like, I send him something I wrote. He's just like, this is cool, but it's not fun. I'm like, great, got it.
Wow.
Like, just shit like
yeah.
That, right? So we just talk about just two people, right?
Yeah.
And then I get a call one day from Keisha Center. Shout out to Keisha. And she's like, oh, I got your number from Daniel Kaluuya. Like, do you want to help work on this thing? I'm like, I had Daniel, like, yes, he's like, oh yeah, I wanted to work on it with you, but like, we don't really talk about like work. So like, I just gave her your number to do it. And then that was how the process happened. And the process was essentially the same way that we talk. We just kind of talk about like things we like, themes that we're talking about. He was telling me about more about the movie. And then I got like more close to the Monkey Paw team a little bit. And their work kind of just came about from organic conversations about life that kind of, we kind of juxtaposed stuff from the movie into like what our backgrounds were. And I mean, the stuff that came out, we put out like 7 things. We made like 40. Like, we made a shit ton of stuff that for whatever reason didn't come out. It might come out some one day.
What?
But we made a lot of stuff. Yeah, it was really cool.
You and Daniel did, or was it you and Universal?
Daniel. Yeah. Daniel's crazy.
Wow.
He's crazy. He's really, he gets it in.
He goes hard.
He goes hard. He's a behind the scenes guy. Like, he's a you know, he's whatever, but like, he's a behind the scenes guy. Like, he's crazy.
Listen, everybody listen to this. The longevity is behind the camera.
Right.
Yeah. It's behind the pen. Because yeah. If you're behind the pen, that means you're holding it. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in front. Mm-hmm. What is your view on ownership? Does it mean a lot to you?
It depends, right? So, okay. When you're going into some, like, even for me now, like, when I'm going into, like, partnerships, right? I think that there's, ownership is very important. And we talk about, like, I'm the owner, I'm the this person, I'm the boss. Like, cool. But what are you the boss of? What are you the owner of? Like, for me, talking about, like, community, like, you're always stronger together. And so, you know, the way that, like, a lot of people approach, like, you know, putting in their C-suites or, like, building their board or whatever, is, like, they're not trying to be your boss. They're not trying to own you. They're not trying to have all the money. They're trying to say, I'm building a situation where we all have mutual interests for success. So if I'm not the best CEO, I need to go find the best CEO.
Correct.
If I'm not the best pattern maker, I got to find someone to be the best pattern maker. If I'm not the best, you know, cinematographer, I got to go find someone that can hold the camera better than me or whatever. You know, that is like, so for me, like, there's nothing wrong with partnership or even saying, like, a lot of people that we know, like, in their brands, they're minority owners, but who cares? They're minority owners in a massive billion-dollar business as opposed to
right.
We own everything of like a $200,000 company. Like, great. Right. Good for you. You're the owner. Right. Great. Amazing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it just depends on what it is and like what your goals are. But for me, the goals are community and for as many people to win as possible. So ownership is cool. We all can get a piece of it or if we all have mutually aligned ambitions or goals. But it's the end all is not always ownership. I see a lot of people that are just like, hesitant to like end certain deals or situations because they're like, oh, they want to take 60% of the business, but I'm like, but they're doing 90% of the work, so like,
right.
You know what I'm saying, like,
right,
what,
right, well, like, what are we talking about right now?
So exactly, like, what are we actually talking about? You know, right. When it comes to ownership, like, if you don't have the skills to do something,
go and find
they're bringing it
do.
To you. That's fine. That helps
let
you
eat.
Up.
Let them eat.
Rise the tide.
Yeah. Well, brother, we have reached the end of another incredible episode. Brother G-Day, I want to thank you for coming and just sharing this wisdom, brother.
Of course, man.
Giving this game. So hopefully a lot of people will prune some, you know, very incredible jewels from it.
because my brother laid some incredible stuff down. Thank you, brother. Yeah, best of luck to you always.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.